Hey there, it's so good to be with you today, and wherever you're joining in from, I trust that our time together is something that is rich for you, is something that speaks to your heart, speaks to our circumstance and where we're at. So good to see you. We're continuing our journey on Sabbath. Dr. Robbie kicked it off last week, laid a really solid foundation for us, and I'm going to continue to share some of my learnings and experience with Sabbath over these past 18 months. But before we do that, I just want to take a moment just to pause. I want to take a moment for us to reflect and consider. And it's probably something we don't often do, is to just stop. So I'm going to ask you just to take a couple of deep breaths. Then we're going to spend just 30 seconds, that's all, just 30 seconds, just in silence, to reflect on what we're about to journey through and allowing to create a space for God, through His power of His Spirit, to speak to us. So let's do that now. Take a couple of deep breaths, close your eyes, and just stop. It's kind of a little bit awkward, right? It's kind of something we just don't do. You may have heard me say this before, but everything's awkward until it's normal. And some of the things we're going to talk about, whether it be pausing, resting, meditating, just simply stopping, it's going to feel awkward. But I ask you to push through, resist the awkward, embrace the awkward, because I guarantee you, sooner or later, it will just become normal. Let's continue this journey as we talk about Sabbath. I want to read a scripture to you. It's one that you've actually heard the last 2 weeks. And my hope is you actually don't grow tired of hearing this, because it is such a powerful scripture. And it's something I want to get deep into our hearts over these coming weeks. It's found in Matthew chapter 11, verse 28 and 30. And I'm reading from the Message translation. And it says this: "Are you tired? Worn out? Burn out on religion? Come to me, get away with me, and you'll recover your life. And I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly." It is such a beautiful scripture. And as I said earlier, it lays such a solid foundation for the journey that we're on together. By the end of our time together, I hope and pray, and even as we journey next week, that you might have a fresh revelation of what Sabbath means to you. And that we'd all be just in a position and a place to say yes to embracing Sabbath. And that's going to look like different things to different people. And I don't want us to compare our Sabbath expression to another person's. But let's just say yes to be willing to hear what God is saying in this season. And I personally, I want to own the fact that I don't necessarily live out Sabbath like I should. I'm absolutely sharing with you today, not from a position of expertise, not even from a position of I've got it together, but simply someone who's putting their hand up and saying, God, I want to live the life that you have called me to live. I want to live a life just like Jesus did and learn what that means to walk in those unforced rhythms of grace and peace and rest and Sabbath. You see, if I go back to July 2020, I had an event which kind of has changed my life, and I had a stroke. Now, we've talked about that, and I'm not necessarily going to dwell on it for any long period of time, other than to say it has been a marker in my life that has caused me to pause, stop, and reflect on how I live my life. I am so grateful that I don't really have any significant ongoing health issues from that. But it has absolutely caused me to consider how I live my life, because I believe I've got more to offer. I believe I want to journey the next 10, 20, 30 years in the fullness of all that God has called me to do. Now, I'm grateful that my stroke wasn't necessarily caused out of a stress-related situation. I had a hole in my heart, and that threw a blood clot into my brain, and the story goes from there. But it's been enough to actually make me truly, deeply reflect on this idea of Sabbath and make sure that I live my best years in the years to come. So what comes to mind for you when you think of Sabbath? Do you even think about Sabbath? If I think back to a younger version of me, Sabbath was probably more, felt like a punishment, if I'm really honest. It was like a stripping away, a ripping out of all the fun things. And, you know, I think about people just sitting at home all day long with a Bible in their hand and you know, meditating on the Word of God and praying. And, yeah, let's be honest about it. That didn't sound all that attractive to me as a younger person. But now as someone who's older, with a bit more life experience, and through the things that I've started to read and journey and understand, I see Sabbath is so much more than that. It's not necessarily a stripping away. Sabbath is about abundance. There's a richness that comes from Sabbath. And my hope is that each of us can identify with that kind of Sabbath and not the Sabbath I viewed as a kid. So the word Sabbath, it simply means to rest and to worship. And so what does that look like for us? What do the scriptures say about it? Let's start with the Old Testament. The most obvious of them would be the Ten Commandments. And we read in Exodus chapter 20, where it says, "Remember to observe the Sabbath day and keep it holy. You have 6 days each week of ordinary work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath day, a day of rest dedicated to the Lord your God. And on that day, no one in your household may do any work. And this includes your sons and your daughters, your male and female servants, your livestock, any foreigners that live among you. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and everything in them, but on the seventh day he rested. That is why the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and set it apart as holy." It's a commandment. Jesus saw it as important enough to embed it in stone, to say, "This, for my people and for generations to come, I want you to observe the Sabbath." And if I'm honest, I haven't done that. And so many of us don't do that. Even in the Old Testament, it also talks about this principle of fields having a sabbatical, that you plant and you harvest for 6 years, and then you give a seventh year of rest for that field to rejuvenate, for the nutrients to come back in. I saw that myself when I did a year working on a cotton farm. They still practice that today, where they will harvest for a full 6 years and give 1 year of rest for the land to restore itself. It's not only a law and a principle that God had implanted, it's a law and principle of nature itself. So why wouldn't us, as God's created, have that same principle applied to our lives in the way we live out the Sabbath and having rest? And then you look at the New Testament. There was this one moment where Jesus was walking with his disciples. They were going through a field, and the disciples reached down and took some grain from the heads of wheat and started to eat it. The Pharisees nearby called Jesus on that. He says, "Look, Jesus, your disciples are working on the Sabbath." And Jesus turned to them and he said this, "The Sabbath was made to meet the needs of people, and not people meet the requirements of the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord, even over the Sabbath." The Sabbath was created for us. It has a purpose. We don't have to be bound in the law and the hard and fast of what it might look like, but there is this solid principle of what does this look like, because the Sabbath, it was made for us. I want to talk a moment about pace. Now, it's been really interesting for me as I've started to be on this journey myself over the past 18 months, to start to see some really well-known teachers and leaders in the Christian world start to come out and talk around this idea of Sabbath. One particular person is Craig Groeschel. I'm a big fan of Craig's, and he has an incredible podcast, and he's really strong on leadership, and I listen to a lot of his stuff and read a lot of his books. But this past year, Craig has been on a journey, which he has spoken about, and I encourage you to check out his series called A Better Way, where he talks about his journey and realizing that the pace he was living wasn't going to be sustainable and that he needed to make some changes. Pace is this really interesting topic for me, because if I go back to sort of the start of COVID, when all the gyms shut down, I needed something different to exercise. And so I started running. And It's not, running is not something that I would normally have done. I did it every now and then, but I'm not particularly great at it. But this idea of pace comes into its own when we talk about running. You see, I've got this watch here, and when I start running, I activate it and press play, and it starts to record a whole lot of things. It records my heart rate, it records my pace. Now, when I talk about pace, when we're in the terms of running, it's how many minutes does it take me to do 1 kilometer? And so at any given time when I'm doing my run, I can look down at my watch and see what pace I'm doing. So for me, I probably sit, if I'm really going pretty hard, I might do 5 minutes, kilometers. So 1 kilometer in 5 minutes. And so I'll check and make sure, am I on pace? Do I need to speed up? Do I need to slow down? Am I going a little bit too hard? And it's just a great measure to keep where I'm at. Now, different days, my pace may change. It might be based on how I'm feeling, whether I've been working really hard, whatever it might be. And so I can have a look and I go into what we call Strava. If you're not into fitness and running and things, Strava is an application which all this data on my watch gets sucked into. And then I can start to see a pattern. What does my pace look like over a series of time? Now, there's this really cool thing that Strava does, where it has a look at the intensity of what I'm doing, where it combines my pace, the elevation that I'm running, the altitude that I'm running, my heart rate, and all those things, and works out how intense I've been running. And then what Strava does, it might pop up when I've done a high intensity exercise, and it goes, hey, Stephen, just be aware that you're training at pretty high intensity at the moment. You may need to take a rest for the rest of the week so that you're ready to go again next week. It's this awesome, I guess, analogy of what our lives look like. What is the pace that we're running? And I just want to encourage you too, don't compare your pace with somebody else's pace. Now again, let's use the running analogy. I run, at my best, maybe a 5-minute kilometer. My son Elijah, he's just over 4 minutes when he does it. There is no way that I can compete with that. But then Elijah has some mates who go sort of just over 3 minutes per kilometer. Now that just blows my mind that they can even run that fast. But that's their pace. Now, the one thing all three of us as runners have in common is that we need to rest. We can't keep up that pace day in and day out. We have to find moments to rest, recover, so that we continue to do what we enjoy. Now, when we live lives that are marred with rush and hurry and high intensity, on and on and on, what are the first things that get sacrificed? Funny thing is, it's not normally our jobs or our work or the tasks, it's actually the things that are most important to us. Our families, our relationship with Jesus, our quiet times, our rest times, our recreation times, even our mission and our purpose. You see, we place this high priority on the tasks and the things that we have to do. But when it's said and done, we're not going to stand before Jesus and have to give an account of the emails we sent, the phone calls we made, the meetings we had, all those kinds of things. We're going to be held on account as to whether we lived out what he commanded us to do. Whether we love him and we love people. Do we love God? Do we love people? That's what we're going to be held account to. And are we creating a pace that enables us to do that? I love the quote that Robbie shared with us last week by Walter Brueggemann. It said this, those who keep the Sabbath live all 7 days differently. That has resonated so deeply with me. I'm an absolute believer that if we can work out what the Sabbath looks like for us and take that day where we use it for rest and to worship, it's going to change the rest of our lives. It's going to change every day that we live. There's a book which I've been reading by John Mark Comer, and it's called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. It's one that really formed a great foundation to some of this thought process. I'm sharing, some of the things I'm sharing have come out of that as well. But he made this statement that says, Jesus was busy, but he was never hurried. Let me just say it again. Jesus was busy, but he was never hurried. This is Messiah we're talking about. This is Jesus who was charged with saving the whole of the world. And he wasn't hurried. Sure, he was busy. He had tasks to do. He had people to meet. He had miracles to perform. Again, as Robbie shared with us last week, Jesus walked everywhere. We don't read about Jesus running from this miracle to that miracle, from this appointment to that appointment. He knew what he was about. He knew how to do it with a pace that was sustainable, a peace that was life-giving, that was worryless, that was faithful. Jesus is the ultimate example of how we should be living our lives. I probably need to highlight at this point that this isn't like a get out of jail card for those of us who just want to be lazy. You know, Jesus was busy, but he just wasn't hurried. And he definitely wasn't lazy. He was about on mission about the thing that the Father had called him to do. This is an excuse for us to sit on our butt and do nothing. If we want to create life-giving communities, if we want to reach this nation for Jesus, if we want to see mercy and justice, echoed throughout this world, it's going to mean we're busy. But we just need to learn to have a pace that works, a rhythm that works, and moments of rest in the midst of that. I realize in the context of my life, there were moments, I actually had a friend come up to me once and said, "Man, you just go so fast, you're almost running between your appointments." And it challenged me. So I stopped and started to reflect. And so now, and feel free to call me on it, if you see me running between meetings, to just slow my pace, to just walk, to be in the moment, to be open to just have a conversation with someone on the way to something else, to not just overlook those circumstances and situations around me. I've been trying more deliberately to have encounters with people, and in those encounters, stop and pray for somebody. To just breathe and lower the pace, slow down the pace, so that it's more sustainable. And when I think about pace, the scripture that I read at the start, it is so appropriate, where Jesus says, "Walk with me, work with me, and watch how I do it, and learn those unforced rhythms of grace." See, Jesus was never hurried. He was busy, but never hurried. He knew the pace he needed to keep to be able to fulfill all that the Father had called to him. What's the pace that we're living? Is it sustainable? And is it allowing us to accomplish all that God has put before us? The second thing I want to talk about is environment. And probably just to be clear here, when I'm talking about environment, yes, it's a place and the location that we create for Sabbath and rest, but it's so much more than that. It's also about our state of mind. You know, what environment are we creating for rest? Are we constantly thinking through things and processing things and worrying about things? You know, what are the disciplines we're doing? What are the disciplines that we're embracing? Because they all go together to create an environment that is rich for rest and rich for Sabbath. We have this flower on our bench, and you'll see it on the screens here. It's this orchid. And if I'm really honest, I'm absolutely not a green thumb. Like, I pretty much could kill anything, and my garden's not that impressive. But this orchid, I look at it every morning when I'm making my breakfast, and it just brings me delight. And the reason it does is because that orchid actually wasn't thriving. It was just, it didn't really have too much flower on it. It had a couple of stems. But as you can see now, it is absolutely thriving and rich with fruit or flower. And it is beautiful. And I look at it every day. And as I said, it brings me delight. It brings me joy. It's almost like Ruth and our little child that, you know, our boys are all grown up now, but here's this orchid that's just growing and flourishing and brings us so much joy. But all we did, the only thing we did to change it, was we changed its environment. We moved it from where it was and where it wasn't thriving to a position that has given it everything it needs to create healthy, vibrant, flourishing life. And what's that for a plant? It's the nutrients. It's the we water, you know, the amount that we're meant to. But more than that, it's the sunlight. And this interesting thing happened with this plant when I moved it into this spot. It's in the corner of our kitchen, which is surrounded by windows, is that I'd rotate it so that the flowers would face us. And so we could see, you know, the beauty of what was before us. But what this orchid would do is those flowers would start to turn around to face the source of light and out the window again. And so we couldn't see them, that all we saw was the back of these flowers. But it's just this beautiful picture for me that even the flower, even this plant knew where its source of life was going to come from that sun. And the challenge for me is, do I know the source of my life? Do I know the source and the environment that is going to produce the best in me? And am I positioning myself to face that and to grab hold of it and the fullness of that? I also want us to think about flipping it. So often we think about Sabbath as this end of the week. Oh, it's the recovery after a really big week. But what if Sabbath is so much more than that? What if Sabbath is actually setting us up for the week to come? That is preparing us for all that God has, you know, the life-giving opportunities that are going to be before us, to speak into people's lives, to bring hope and to bring healing. I noticed several times that Jesus actually heals on the Sabbath. And, you know, we read in the scriptures, this actually caused a whole lot of issues with the Pharisees as well, that Jesus would go about healing people on the Sabbath. You know, you have a look in Matthew chapter 12, where he healed the man with a withered hand. Or in Luke chapter 13, where there's a woman who had been bent over with an infirmity for 18 years, and Jesus heals them on the Sabbath. Is this a mistake? Or does it actually speak to the heart of what the Sabbath is about? That the Sabbath is about healing. The Sabbath is about salvation. If Jesus himself practiced these things on the Sabbath, what does that look like for us? Is the Sabbath a day of healing for our soul? Is it a day of salvation for us that prepares us for the week to come? If we have a look at the four English translations of the Hebrew word for Sabbath, Shabbat, we start to get a good idea of what the practice of Sabbath can look like. Now, these have been taken from John Mark Comer's book, which I referenced earlier, and he takes a pretty hardcore approach. Friday night to Saturday morning, sorry, to Saturday evening, they practice Sabbath. And these are the, I guess, the four areas which he has adopted in his practice of Sabbath. And the first one of these is stopping. And it's kind of fairly obvious, right? We stop work. We stop thinking about work. You know, how often do we actually, you know, we might not be at work, but we think about it all the time. We stop worrying. And we start practicing Sabbath that trusts God with these things. And we stop wanting. How often in our consumer society do we want and do we desire this or stretch for that? You know, we're going to the shops and buying this or that. The day of Sabbath is about stopping all those things. The second thing is it's about resting. You realize that the average person now sleeps about 7 hours a night. If you go back to pre-light bulb days, it was actually something like 11. We actually don't get as much rest as we need. And there's this interesting thing that takes place where we just go and we go and we go and we don't actually rest in the way that we should. So Sabbath is about rest. To just lie around and relax. Take just a gentle stroll through places like this and find rest in those moments. Avoid heavy conversations. The Jews themselves, they actually don't practice intercessory prayer on the Sabbath. They worship and they pray to the Father, but they realize that intercessory prayer, that's kind of a next level when it comes to, you know, the practice of prayer. And so they find rest in that. We rest physically, emotionally, and mentally. The third one is delighting. And this is the one that's probably been, I've been thinking about a little bit because it probably didn't fit into the mold of what I thought Sabbath would be like. But it's delighting. He feasts, he parties, he has good food and good wine, and he delights in all these things. And he calls it pleasure stacking. You know, how do we, you know, find those things which we can delight in and find pleasure in? Because the Lord created these things. He wants us to enjoy life. There are things he created. And what does it look like to find delight in the Sabbath and all that God has created? And the final one is worship. To sing. To walk, to pray, to praise, to adore. And the interesting thing takes place here where kind of each one of these four leads to the other, that when we stop and then when we rest, we start to see delight, which our delight then leads to this spirit of worship, and it can't help but come out of us. We stop, we rest, we delight, we worship. So these disciplines of Sabbath that we've just been talking about, it's not like this formula, but it's a progression. That when we stop, when we rest, when we start to delight, that leads to worship. It's this powerful thing that takes place. And it's a really practical way of what Sabbath could look like in our lives. In fact, we're going to take a moment right now and we're going to go into a time of worship and song. And I would ask that you use this time to start to consider, what does it look like for you to stop, to rest, to delight, and to worship. And then I'm going to come back and we're going to continue and finish this time off. Thank you. I think there's a really good point to reflect on for a moment. Now, traditionally in Christian world, the Sabbath would be seen as a Sunday. Now, for many of you, you work on a Sunday. Culture has changed to the point that we're a kind of a 7 day a week economy where we work, you know, you could have to work anytime, whether that be day or night as well, if you do shift work. I had to journey this for myself in my own business where we run retail stores, and the pressure was on for us to open on Sundays. Traditionally, we didn't do that if I go back many years, but now we do. For me, it's actually about the principle of Sabbath. Now, if you're a preacher, you don't get to have Sundays off. But I do believe fundamentally we all need to find a day which becomes our Sabbath day, where we can start to put these things into practice. It may not be a Sunday, but whatever day it is, we're being deliberate and intentional and make sure it's part of our lives and a discipline that we hold on to. As we take this journey on Sabbath, I just want to encourage you. There is every likelihood, day one, you'll go out there and think, okay, this is going to be my Sabbath day. I'm going to rest, I'm going to read the word, I'm going to eat some good food. There's every likelihood you're going to fail at it. There's going to be a crisis. Someone's going to come along and need your time, or you're going to get an interruption, or you're going to burn the food, or whatever it might be. I would ask you to continue to pursue it. Don't give up just because the first few times it falls in a heap. All right? Everything's awkward until it's normal. Keep at it. And I believe that as we start to practice this, it just becomes a part of our life, an unforced rhythm of grace that we can approach when we come into this space of Sabbath. Now, this isn't just a practice reserved for busy people, right? It can, maybe some of the things I've been talking about, it can sound a little bit like that. Now, you might be retired and going, hey, I'm not busy, I'm enjoying life. I just get to rest pretty much every day. That may be the case, but what does it look like for you even to take a day where you pause and rest and worship and prepare yourself for what God would have for you this week? Sabbath is not just for busy people. Sabbath is for all of us. So what does it look like for you to create an environment of Sabbath, an environment for rest? What are some of those practices you can grab hold of as we walk out this whole idea of Sabbath together? Okay, so let's bring all this together and wrap things up. And I want to start by just reading two scriptures to you. And the first one is from Romans chapter 12, verse 2, which says this: don't copy the behaviors and customs of this world, but let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think. And then you will learn to know God's will for you, which is good and pleasing and perfect. And then again, in Proverbs 14, 12, it says this: there is a way that seems right, but in the end it leads to death. So let's not look to the patterns of this world, which would say rush, hurry, you know, give it all you've got, you know, until you're dying on your deathbed. But instead, let's look to Jesus, who set the example of how we should live our lives, the pace and the environment that we should create, and a place for Sabbath and rest. I want to wrap up with a couple of questions for you. Where are the biggest areas in your life that seem most different to the way Jesus lived? What are those areas where we need to align with Him better? My hope and prayer is that we allow the Holy Spirit to speak to us in this moment and in the week ahead to start to shine a light on those areas where we're just living a life different to the way Jesus did and it needs to align with Him. And I'd ask you to start to think about just one thing, that's all, just one thing you can change maybe this week, or even start to change, where you can start living in that Sabbath life, a life which is rest-filled, that is not necessarily hurried and rushed all the time. What's that one thing? Don't try and change everything all at once. Just grab that one thing and see what that might look for you. You might choose to disconnect from your devices. Turn them off for a day. Turn them off for a morning. And even when we talk about Sabbath, I don't want you to feel overwhelmed and think, I've got to just dedicate a whole day to it. That might be too much to go from the get-go, but why don't you just set aside a couple of hours on a day and dedicate it to Sabbath and rest? And then over time, build on that. Don't feel the condemnation or weight of having to get it nailed in the first moments. We're on a journey. And we can discover what this looks like together. So what's our response? Is the busyness that we're living stopping us from the fullness of what God's called us to do and be? I love this quote by Eugene Peterson. It says, if you can't afford to take a day a week for rest, you're taking yourself too seriously. How often do we think the world revolves around us, that surely if I took a day off, think the whole world's going to implode? I've just come back from holidays. I took 3 weeks off and I realized while I was there how much I did need it. It's probably the first time in I don't know how long where I didn't check my email for 2.5 weeks. It was weird at first. In fact, it was probably checking my phone and I totally turned them off so it wouldn't come through. What's it look like to grab hold of some of those things? Not see ourselves so important that the world can't function without us, to focus on rest and Sabbath and put God first in our lives. You see, God cares more about you and your well-being than what you can do for Him. He wants you to continue to live a healthy, fruitful life. But He's not going to push you to the point of breaking in that. He has these unforced rhythms of grace that He wants you to learn to walk in. There's a prayer, and this comes from that series that I talked about with Craig Rochelle, A Better Way. And it's a prayer that I've actually made part of almost my daily routine, a spiritual ritual, a discipline. And it's a prayer which I pray each morning when I go on my morning walk or I start my day. And I guess I want to throw out a challenge there that you might be able to grab hold of this prayer and start to pray it. And it's not a formula. It's not like if I pray this, everything's going to be right in the day. But what it does, it aligns my thinking with the way Jesus lived His life. And this is the prayer. It's pretty simple. It says this, God, help me to walk slowly enough to experience Jesus fully and to love people deeply. I'm going to read that again. God, help me to walk slowly enough to experience Jesus fully and to love people deeply. What would it look like if this community of faith grabbed hold of that prayer? That we walked at a pace that was slow enough to experience the fullness of Jesus and to love those around us so deeply that it changed their lives. Because again, as I said earlier, when it's all said and done, we're going to be held account for whether we loved God and we loved people. God bless.